When you hop into bed at night, that time between your head hitting the pillow and falling asleep, it's often a time, isn't it, when you do some reflecting and soul searching? You know, am I achieving everything I want to? Will I be a success? Am I happy? Can I be happier? But are these the right questions to ask when you're contemplating the meaning of your life and judging your contribution? Author Emily Esfahani-Smith has spent 5 years researching this, interviewing hundreds of people, and she wrote in the New York Times this month, "Today's college students desperately want to change the world, but too many think that living a meaningful life requires doing something extraordinary and attention-grabbing, like becoming an Instagram celebrity, starting a wildly successful company, or ending a humanitarian crisis." Emily Esfahani-Smith joins us on the phone from Washington, D.C. Emily, why is aspiring to do and be something remarkable, in your opinion, misguided as a goal?
I don't think there's anything wrong necessarily with having aspirations, even grand aspirations for what you hope your life will be. But the reality is that most people, most of us, will end up leading ordinary lives. You know, we won't necessarily achieve those aspirations that we set for ourselves when we're young to, you know, start a business, to become a politician, to, you know, be an important person, make a big impact on the world. And so I think the question is, how do we reconcile ourselves to that? And how do we find meaning within the limited life that we'll most likely end up leading?
Well, the question, am I happy, is something that you do ask yourselves in moments of contemplation. You say that changing happiness is counterintuitive, though, and can actually lead to loneliness. Tease that out for me.
So I think, you know, it's of course natural to want to be happy. And, you know, in Western culture, there's this emphasis placed on happiness as a pursuit. A good life, we're told, is a happy life. But there's research that shows that actually chasing happiness can backfire. And there's a number of reasons for it. One is that, you know, when we live in a culture that emphasizes happiness, there's this expectation that's created that we should always be happy and that happiness should be this goal we should aspire to. And if we're not happy, then there's something wrong with us. And so I think that that can be jarring for people who are experiencing adversity or stress. And I think it's rooted in a misguided idea, because it's natural to not be happy all the time. You know, life is full of adversity and suffering. And I think the happiness zeitgeist kind of shields us from that and makes us think that those more negative experiences aren't to be welcomed into our lives. And I think the other reason has to do with the fact that what actually makes people happy is doing things that are meaningful.
So, yes, all right. So if it's not happiness or, you know, achieving some remarkable thing in the world, what should we be aspiring to?
Meaning, psychologists define a meaningful life as a life where you're connecting and contributing to something beyond yourself. So, you know, that something could be your family, it could be the work that you do, it could be your community. In that New York Times piece I wrote, I talked about the novel Middlemarch and the heroine of that novel, Dorothea, who, you know, she wants to lead an extraordinary life, but then realizes that's not going to work out. And she ends up finding meaning by just doing good acts within her local community that make a difference in the lives of the people around her.
Yes, I mean, some people would say, isn't that lowering the bar, you know, settling for something less than you might be able to achieve in the world?
You know, for my book, The Power of Meaning, I interviewed dozens of people about their meaning stories, what gives their lives meaning. And, you know, time and time again, I heard a similar kind of story. I heard a story of people when they were young having these grand aspirations, and then as they got older, realizing that leading a meaningful life was about something else. And that something else was helping other people, serving other people. So I spoke to a man who wanted to be a politician when he was younger. He became a professor instead and now finds meaning in helping his students, educating them, in helping his colleagues, advancing their careers, his younger colleagues, and in raising his children. So these are what psychologists call acts of generativity, acts of giving to others and to your community, which when people do them, maybe it sounds like they're settling for less, but actually to the people themselves, it fills them with meaning and kind of adds fullness to their lives.
Now, you talk about there being sort of four pillars of meaning, a meaningful life. The first two are belonging and purpose, which I think in a way you've sort of talked about. The third one is transcendence. What do you mean by that?
So this is a concept I think that can sometimes be hard for people to grasp, but people who have had these experiences know them and they rate them as among the most meaningful of their lives. So transcendent experiences, they're those moments when you're lifted above the kind of hustle and bustle of daily life. That voice inside your head kind of starts turning down and you feel connected to something much bigger. So I think for a lot of people, these transcendent experiences happen in nature, like when they're hiking or when they're looking up at the stars at night. For others, it can be through religion or spirituality, praying, meditating, going to a service. These rituals that help us basically step outside of ourselves a little bit and gain a bigger perspective on what life is about.
So could that be art? Where do you find transcendence?
For me, I do find it in art, going to a museum and just, you know, looking at something beautiful. It can be a moment that gets you outside of your own head a little bit. Also, I think listening to music can do it for a lot of people. Certainly for me, being in nature, just walking in the woods and, you know, being surrounded by a canopy of trees, there's something very restorative about it. And I think anything, especially today, that kind of gets us away from our devices and our technology, which tethers us to the here and now, it can be a portal to transcendence and to stepping beyond this kind of here and now mentality.
Well, you also say, Emily, that the simple art of storytelling can be crucial in bringing a person meaning and fulfillment. Tell me about how that works for you.
Storytelling is the fourth pillar of meaning. And what I'm talking about when I'm talking about storytelling is the story that you tell yourself about yourself. So about how you became the person that you are today, about the different experiences that you've had in your life. I think, you know, we're all storytellers, whether we realize it or not, and we're all kind of making narrative choices about the kinds of stories that we tell about who we are. So, you know, you can have two people who've had very similar childhoods, and one will tell a story like, oh, you know, I had a wonderful childhood. It was, you know, full of joy. My parents loved me and, you know, they really supported me. Another person could say, I had a wonderful childhood, but I felt like, you know, my parents really didn't let me do the things that I wanted to do. And I always felt inhibited. And I never felt like I could be my true self when I was at home. So the idea is that, you know, you can take your set of experiences and you can interpret them in ways that are either helpful to you and empower you to live a more meaningful life or in ways that hold you back.
In that recasting, though, is there a risk that, you know, you might take liberties and retell your own history with a version that you wished had happened, but that isn't very helpful to the reality of your life?
I think there's definitely that risk, and I would really caution people to avoid, you know, trying to embellish or fabricate elements of their story, because that's, of course, not helpful. What's helpful is to, you know, take these experiences, and often they tend to be the more difficult experiences of our lives because those are the ones that we really need to make sense of and process, to take them and to reflect on them and to ask ourselves, you know, how did that experience shape us? What did we lose from it? And also, you know, what did we gain? I think every experience that we have, it changes us in some way and often helps us to grow and often leads to benefits that we might not be initially aware of. So I think kind of casting that story with, you know, with that kind of positive, hopeful light, you can always respect the facts, and you must respect the facts, but there are ways to kind of tell your story that that won't hold you back, basically.
All right. So if you kind of let go of the pursuit of happiness and think more about living a meaningful life, which, as you say, is about connecting and contributing to something beyond yourself, how does that better equip you say, when things are not going well in your life?
That's a great question. So it's basically about, I think what you're asking is resilience. So, you know, some people, when things start going bad, they just collapse under the pressure, that they can't take it. And other people are able to endure and to fight through it and to come out of, you know, that crucible experience, either, you know, feeling stronger and feeling like they've grown, instead of feeling like they were just shattered by it. And what the research shows us pretty clearly is that people who have meaning in their lives and who kind of have this meaning mindset, you know, so they're searching for meaning, they care about meaning, they're much more resilient to suffering than those who don't. Viktor Frankl, the Holocaust survivor who wrote Man's Search for Meaning, is a great example. His book was based on his experiences in the concentration camp, and what he found was that the prisoners who had something to live for, some purpose, were much more resilient to suffering and even, he said, more apt to survive in the face of the general degradations of camp life.
And Emily Esfahani-Smith is from the Hoover Institution in the United States and the author of The Power of Meaning, Finding Fulfillment in a World Obsessed with Happiness. Emily, it's great to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.